And now I would like to introduce tonight's speaker, Suzanne from La Mesa. All right.
Suzanne, alcoholic. Thank you to everybody who took tokens. I think you don't even need to hear from me, you know? Like, it's just proof that Alcoholics Anonymous works, and it's pretty amazing. I love birthdays. I wish they would have gone on a little longer, but it's okay. John gave me a pep talk that did not help at all. Thanks, John. Appreciate you. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you to the hands that made the food. We had a wonderful dinner. I love South Bay Pioneers. Every time I come down here, I feel like I learn a little something new about it. And it's a pretty cool place. It's helped a lot of people. And I'll just get right into it. My sobriety date is October 29th, 2006. If I don't say anything that you remember this, AA works. It really works. It does. And I'm proof that it works. If I can stay sober and not have a drink, I didn't believe that was possible when I walked in these rooms. And this sobriety date is not my only sobriety date. I've had multiples. But I used to say I relapsed. I never relapsed. I never did it. That's the truth, you know. In hindsight is that I came to AA and I tried to take and I got my court slip signed. So if you're here on my husband calls them gift certificates. I came here on a gift certificate as well, but did not stay because I wasn't ready or whatever the case was. I had more drinking to do. Okay, so timing-wise, I think I got plenty. I can go till 9-ish. Yeah, okay, great. I love alcohol. You know, that's why I'm standing here before you. I started drinking pretty young. I grew up in a family that absolutely drank, and we were crazy. Both of my parents were what I would call alcoholics. I had a really messed up childhood. All of these things are part of my story, but they don't make me out. That's not what makes me alcoholic. And what I've learned here is basically that. Somebody said it earlier, like, I didn't really know what it was like to be an alcoholic. I don't know what that meant. I drank really early. I was a teenager when I got really started, and you know, I would jokingly say, look at me, I drink like an alcoholic. And I really prided myself on drinking a lot of beer. So I like Bob. I really identify with Dr. Bob because he loved beer. I loved beer. I could drink all night. I learned really early if I drank the hard stuff, I was down for the count. And I didn't like that. I wanted the party to go on for a long time. I like to have fun, and I like to drink, and I like the way alcohol made me feel. I had alcohol at an early age, but just sips because it was around. One of my earliest, like, sunshine memories are me on my dad had a big old pickup truck, a big Ford, and from my memory, I sat on the floorboards, and it was huge. You know, it was like there was so much room down there, and he had this, always had a koozie and a beer in it, always. And that was my first real drink, right? My first sip, right? And I just thought it was like the sun was coming through the window, and I have arrived, you know? And obviously, I think I was literally like six. So that did not continue. But I remember that as it was a good memory. It was like, oh, now I can be one of them, you know? I really had my first drink of the summer before sixth grade, and it was my first real experience with booze that would set up the pattern of the rest of my drinking. People call it a drinking career. I think that's interesting. I didn't get paid, that's for sure, but I did a really good job. And I drank basically a bunch. You know, we were 11, 12, and we went over to my friend's house, and his mom had like a tea cozy, which is like a two shelf on wheels full of different beautiful bottles of alcohol. And we decided that we were gonna take one sip out of every bottle and then go to the park, you know, cause we're 11, we're 12, like we're gonna go play. And what happened for me is we all took a drink and then they wanted to go to the park and I wasn't finished yet. you know, like, you guys are done. Like, we're just feeling it. And that was the pattern of my whole drinking. And what I learned early on was that I had to pre-party. So I drank before we were drinking, and I drank after we were drinking, because it became very apparent really young that I didn't drink like everybody else. I grew up in a small town in Idaho, and we did, I thought all the kids were drinking. You know, that's my perspective, was that we were all going, stealing kegs out of the ice rink and going out in the mountains and charging $5 a cup. And not all the kids were doing that. Those the kids I was hanging out with. And that was the kind of the pattern of my drinking. And it started pretty early for me. You know, like, when I drink, something different happens. And I didn't learn that until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know the words to describe what was happening when I put alcohol in my body. I just felt right. I just felt comfortable. I felt, like, relaxed. I felt prettier, taller, funnier, sluttier, all the things, you know. I got the ers. My friend calls it, I got a case of the ers. And alcohol did that for me, and it made me popular, made me friendly. And I like that a lot. And it did that for me for a long time. But what happened was, people started talking right away. Like, they'd say, hey, you know, like, how'd you get so drunk? You know, because I was literally, like, taking my little can of Tab. I really like, does anybody remember Tab? It's a diet drink. Okay, I'm in the right crowd. All right. Sometimes in meetings, they're like, what's that? And I would take that can, and I would pretend to drink that all night, and I would go back to the truck and fill it up with what I really wanted to drink. And I had to hide my drinking really early on. So drank before, had to hide it. You know, I think I was pretty much an alcoholic when I started. And the consequences didn't start taking effect until a little bit later, but they did start early on. I graduated high school barely and moved away from that small town as quick as I could, because I had burned every bridge there. So alcohol started doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, you know? Like, I thought it was great and it felt wonderful, but it was already destroying relationships. I was already... you know, leaving people in the dust and pretending, not pretending, but really believing that I was a victim of all the circumstances, you know, and moved away pretty quickly. And I had one parent there and one parent here, and that's how I ended up in San Diego. And my drinking just quickly escalated. And what happened was, I'm saying that a lot tonight, that's my phrase, that's my catchphrase. You know, I went to school. I went to San Diego City College, and I was, you know, going to change everything. You know, I had a lot of those moments in sobriety or in drinking before sobriety where I thought, this is going to make it different for me. Like, I moved. I did a geographic, right? Everything is going to change. I'm not going to leave a trail of heartache behind me and be a liar anymore. That was my big thing. I'm not going to lie anymore. Every time my mouth opened, that's just what came out. You know, I didn't know how to tell the truth. I believe that as soon as I started ingesting alcohol, I stopped maturing. Like, emotionally, I was 11, 12, 13 for a long time. And I had a lot of expectations on other people, but not on myself. And I just kind of left, it was ugly. I think Alcoholics Anonymous has changed me a lot. You know, I don't think it's done with me by any means, but I don't know where that's coming from. Alcoholics Anonymous has changed me a lot. You know, I think about that young girl that I was and what I was willing to do to get alcohol in my body. And, you know, I went to school and everything was going to be different. And within half a semester, I was dropped out of all my classes. They like it when you show up. There was no online college back then, so you had to show up to class. And I was really busy in Tijuana, because I wasn't old enough yet. So that's where I did all my drinking. And they frown on that. So I dropped out and got the talk, and I quickly went to beauty school because, you know, that sounds like a great idea. And I actually was interested in it. They got to wear all black, and that's all I knew. And so at this point, I think I have a career. I'm going to school. Life is progressing. I graduate a semester later than my friends because I ditched Beauty School 2, there's a story there with an elephant, but we're not going to talk about Del Mar Fair is going on right now. And I was held back a semester. So it's just kind of like, you know, all of those things were always wrapped up in being hungover, not being able to make what I, you know, the commitments that I made on a regular basis. So in my little circle, in my family, I was known as the girl who just couldn't show up. You know, I would say I would do it. I would mean it. That's the big thing. I would mean that I'm going to be there, and I just couldn't do it because alcohol was more important. Getting messed up was more important. Meeting boys in TJ was more important. You know, don't recommend that either. I survived it, and I'm here to tell the story. So life progressed, and drinking took a really important part in my life. It's what pretty much surrounded it. I was able to keep a job. You know that part we read. Taking a trip, not taking a trip, all of that. I thought, well, at least I kept my job somewhere in the middle. You know, like I always had employment. Now, that's how I thought I remembered it, right? But looking back after doing a really thorough four-step inventory with a sponsor, I quit a lot of jobs before they could fire me, you know, because I knew it was coming, you know, and it was always the same. It was always the same reason. My grandmother died. We're talking about that 4 times until they caught on. And well, I didn't have 4 grandmas, but, you know, I'm a liar, you know, I lie and I present really well, you know, even today. I present well, and I say I'm going to do it, but the difference is today I do it and I show up, and only because of Alcoholics Anonymous. So fast forward. Sometimes I just don't know which stories to tell. So I, you know, relationships progressed in and out of relationships. They always ended for the same reason, always connected to alcohol. And I met a man, and I moved in with him, and I got pregnant, you know, and then that was the next thing that was going to change me. I'm going to have a baby now. One thing I didn't mention earlier is I was never going to be like my mother. You know, my mother was an alcoholic. She also had mental illness. She had a lot of things going on. She left us a bunch of times, created a lot of abandonment issues and trauma, and that's why I drank. That's what I would tell people. And I'm sure it had a little part to do with it, but I knew I was never going to be like her. So when I got pregnant, that was it. We're not going to drink anymore. I'm just going to have this baby, and I'm going to be a whole different person. You know, and I heard somebody share about being pregnant and drinking in early sobriety, and I just was able to take a really deep breath because I couldn't tell anybody that. I was so ashamed of it. I had growing this little life inside of me, and what happened is what alcohol does for me is it like loosens me up just enough to get by, and you take alcohol away from me, and this is how I know I'm alcoholic. You take alcohol out of my body for a long enough time, I am so uncomfortable, I cannot go on. And I got really uncomfortable pretty quickly, and started doing things like buying near beer, I think. I don't know what it's, Rolling Rock? Is that it? No? Whatever the near beer is. It's kind of beer. It is beer. It has alcohol in it. So if you're thinking that's a good idea, I don't recommend it. So what I would do is buy a 6-pack of that, and then I would just go get the real stuff because I'm pregnant and I'm not supposed to be drinking, but my doctor did say I could have like 1 or 2, right? He did, I swear. I don't know. So this person that I'm with is like, oh, you're drinking? I thought you were pregnant. And I'm just like, no, it's just near beer. But there's so many bottles in the backyard, in the juniper bushes. You guys know what those are? They hide a lot. They hide a lot. Years later, we cut them all down, and it was embarrassing. But I was already sober, so it was like, oh, wow, how that happened. So I drank. So long story short, I drank just enough to get by my pregnancy, and that baby was born, and it was on. You know, she was born, and I felt like the gates had opened, and I could drink like I wanted to, and I had this baby wrap thing, baby carrier thing that the importance of it is that you don't drop your baby, you know, when you're drinking. And I would wrap her up in it and somehow get this thing, like it literally was 10 feet long and you tied it. And that was my strategy for not hurting my child, was just making sure I didn't drop her. So I would drink all day, wait for him to come home and hand her over and just relax, you know, like that was sort of what happened. And about 2 months into her life, they did an intervention on me. I couldn't go a day without drinking. And I also used to say I was a periodic, you know, or a binge drinker. And so if you're new or if you're just here on a gift certificate and you're not sure, there's no specific way that you have to drink, because I got really caught up in that in early sobriety, is that I had to be a daily drinker to belong here. I would love binging and get real uncomfortable in between and then binging. And by the end of that period of sobriety or period of drinking, I was drinking every day. And they did an intervention on me and they gave me two choices. You can go to Alcoholics Anonymous, or you can go to this crazy program in San Francisco and be gone for a month and they'll brainwash you. I should have picked San Francisco. I did not, because I didn't want to be away from my baby that I was taking such good care of, right? And I had been to AA before, right? I forgot my DUI story. It's not that exciting. I got a DUI, I got a court card, rode my rollerblades around El Cajon and got my little slip sign, didn't listen, took off early. You know, that was my first trip to I didn't relate, you know? It was a bunch of old dudes at the El Cajon Alano Club. And they're probably still there, carrying a great message. And I couldn't hear it. I couldn't hear it. But this period of sobriety was basically threatened, you know, you're gonna do this or you're out. And so I went to AA and pretended, you know, I drank the coffee, I ate the cookies, I smiled and like, I don't know, these people are crazy, you know, they're just nuts. I'm not like them, you know. And I knew, I had an inkling in the back of my head that I drank differently, but I started to hear some things in that little period of sobriety that I remembered. And I remembered, I don't want to say his full name, Scott C. And he cornered me about his DVDs, or they were videos back then. And I really remembered him, just he cared so much about, you know, me staying sober, right? A woman passed me her phone number, and all I did was cry at every meeting, right? But I thought they were crazy, but I was doing the crying. And so I called her, and she tried to help me, really. She really tried to help me. She made sure I had a copy of the book. I didn't tell her I had four on the bookshelf already. She had me come over to her house, start reading with her, talked about an inventory. I just stopped calling her, you know, because she was really demanding. And I just stopped calling her. And what was happening is I was going to those meetings and I was picking up a six pack on my way. You know, I did a little drinking in the parking lot. So if you're new, or you've ever done it before, you know, that was my experience, is that I drank in the parking lot and I came and I sat down in the meeting with a big wad of gum in my mouth and acted like, you know, I was doing the deal. And it just, the jig was up, you know. And about, you know, I was still, you know, being a mother, a really mediocre mother at home and pretending to be sober. And after, I don't know, probably about 6 months of that, I think, you know, it was like the father of my children basically was, he was a big drinker, you know. Here's the confusing part for me. Let me tell you. We drank the same amount. He loved to drink, right? That's why I liked him. But when he wanted to put the drink down, he didn't have to drink. He went 6 months without drinking, right? And he had no problem with it. He is not an alcoholic. He's a heavy drinker. And I didn't understand it. I was very confused by that. And so when I said, like, I'm feeling a lot better, and I think I'm going to take a drink. I'm going to drink at Teresa's 40th birthday party. How could I not? You know, and I literally, for a month, thought about how I was going to present this situation to him so that I could start drinking openly, because I was hiding everything. And he said, I think that's a great idea. You know, because he was just ready to be normal. He wanted me so badly to be normal. And the book talks about that. Like, I know today that the people who understand me are sitting in this room. And I cannot have the expectation of a normal person to understand why I drink, right? It's my problem. It's not theirs. So I started drinking again. And, you know, fast forward, It was pretty quick, you know. She was 2.5, and the walk of shame back into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And in this period, basically, I quit my job, I quit being a mother, and I moved out of the house. And I moved out of the house into a house with a stranger who stocked the beer in the fridge that I liked and drank like I drank. And I found him. He was another man of my dreams, you know, because he stocked the fridge and he was okay with the way that I drank. And I didn't even know him. You know, I was this close to having custody of that child taken away, and they should have taken her away. You know, in that 2.5 years of her life, I drove drunk on a regular basis. My car was my bar. You know, I love the sound of rolling bottles, clink, 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 clink. I still like it. I don't hear it from beer bottles anymore, but that's just what I did. And the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization for me looked like pulling over on the side of the road. I quit breastfeeding that child pretty quickly because I just had better sense after a little while. But I would pull over on the side of the road and climb in the back of my car with her and drink and pretend to feed her because everybody's paying attention. You know, like nobody cares, but I would just climb into the bat and the delusion with that, you know, I was so delusional that that was normal. I had a little feeling that it wasn't normal, but I was tricking you because I would like talk to nobody on the side of the road that I'm going to go breastfeed her now and get in the car. And I would just drink how I needed to drink, you know, and it certainly was not fun anymore. You know, I had a lot of fun drinking as a teenager. I was not having fun at this time. I pretty much was becoming what I said I would never become. And, you know, what happened was it was Halloween, right? My sobriety date is October 29th. And that little girl was going to be Cinderella. You know, that was her costume that year. And I had one job. And the one job was to pick her up in her costume and get her to that fair, you know, that we were going to at her preschool with my neighbor was meeting me there. And I picked her up, but we never made it to the fair. And that neighbor called, now my husband, to basically say she's driving around drunk with your kid. And what had happened, here we go again, is that... that I had moved all my stuff into that guy's house, but I hadn't unpacked because I had a feeling I wasn't staying. And I got her back there safely and passed out. And hours later, I woke up and I'm like, wait a minute. She's here, right? Did I pick her up? I couldn't even remember. And I found her between piles of boxes, passed out, tear streaks down her face, you know, and it was like, the moment, you know, that was my moment. That was a moment of clarity. I didn't stop drinking that day. You know, Dad showed up at the door and took her home and immediately filed for emergency custody. And I was like, I don't really care. You know, that was my response. Oh, well, you know, I guess I'll just be a drinker for the rest of my life, you know? And the next morning I woke up and he was pouring alcohol into my coffee. And this was another moment of clarity. I was like, this is it. This is my life. This is what I decided on, right? Because I really thought at that point I was deciding to pick up a drink or not pick up a drink, you know? And biggest delusion ever. I thought that I was in control of my drinking. And I really, truly thought that when I wanted to stop, I would be able to stop. And boy, was I wrong. So that moment of clarity led me to moving out. That was about it. And basically begging for my spot back in the big bed. And he was smart and he had talked to somebody who was in Alcoholics Anonymous, unfortunately. And they said, don't let her back in. You know, wait till she's sober for a little while and hate that guy. No, it was the right thing to do. And I ended up in a hotel with what little bit, motel, what did we ever decide on that? What's the cheap one? Motel, thank you. With what little money I had left, and I was gonna go to a meeting the next day because I knew where to go. You know, I had an idea where you guys were, and I was gonna be different this time. And it wasn't different for a little while. You know, this is the real moment of clarity for me that I hope I never forget, is that I stopped. I was just going to pick up some tab, you know, from the drugstore. Oh my gosh, where am I going? AM, PM, what is that? Convenience store. So I stopped by the convenience store, and that's all I'm going to get. And something happened when I walked in that door. And what happened for me is I'm going to buy alcohol. That's what I'm going to do. And I had this out-of-body experience where I'm opening the cooler, like, and in my head, literally, like, screaming, you don't need it. What are you doing? You said you weren't going to do it. And this is not the first time it happened, but this is the first memorable time. And I picked it up anyways, and I bought it. And I went home, and I drank it all. And you know what I do? I'm smart. I only buy a six-pack. Because then I have to go back and get more, like multiple times. Like if I was really smart, I'd just get the big one. But I'm under the delusion that I'm just going to have a little and control it. And those were the last few days of my drinking, you know. And what I woke up and I went to a meeting that I affectionately call Lake Worry Women's. It's still in existence today. And I went to that meeting for years of sobriety. And I walked into the room and I sat down and is divine intervention, you know, like something was helping me when I couldn't help myself and I knew where to go, you know. So if you ever work with somebody and you don't think you're getting through, you might be getting through, you know, what you're saying at a meeting might be hitting. They may not stay sober that day, but I knew that you guys had a solution. I thought you were pitiful, but I knew you had a solution, you know, that's my pride, right? Like I'm not as bad as them. Well, I got desperate and done enough to become a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I walked into that meeting and my life has been different ever since. It wasn't like rainbows and unicorns every day, but I met a woman in that meeting, not that day, but another day. I was sitting in the back row, because that's where we sit when we're new. Welcome, back row people. You might belong here. And a woman like walked behind me and whispered in my ear, "I know you." And I was just like, oh no, somebody knows me. And we had worked together at some point. And I remember like, after we talked a few times later, and I remember going, I was a teacher and she was a student in a certain situation, and she had a blue book on her, and I was like, what the hell is she doing? She's supposed to be working right now and she's reading this stupid book. And her name was Deb, and Deb was my Eskimo in Alcoholics Anonymous because she scared me by saying she knew me. And then I was like, oh yeah, I do know her. Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. But by the end of the meeting, I realized she was there too, right? Like, oh, okay, everybody who comes here is an alcoholic. And she came, sometimes it takes a while, but I do get it. So she's the one who basically, she said, you need a sponsor, you need to work these steps. And I was like, yeah, like I've done all that. I didn't do anything, you guys, but I have so much pride and ego that I want you to think I know enough. And she said, you're so full of it. And she ended the conversation with, you better get a sponsor or I'm gonna be your sponsor, you know? And I'm like, oh, I don't want that. And she said, oh, and do you believe in God? And I was like, yeah, totally. I have a great relationship. I didn't know she was being sarcastic, but she's like, you'll be fine. This is great. So the next week I came back and she pushed me in the parking lot into a woman that I had told her I was interested in. And this woman, I had heard her share a few times, and she had a perfect haircut, which is really important to me. And she talked about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, she did. So I'm a little shallow and her looks were important, but it was also that when she talked, I could identify. She said the most embarrassing things, but in my heart, it was like I could breathe a little bit. Like, oh, okay. You know, she said a lot of the same things that I was feeling and thinking, but I didn't have the words for her. And she became my sponsor. And she said, you know, you've done this a few times, so we're gonna get real busy real fast. And she started reading the book with me. And that's how she took me through all 12 steps, is from the page where there's nothing on it, you know. And if you have a sponsor that says go to that page and tells you that's what you know right now, that's a good sponsor, you know. She said you basically know what's on that page, which is nothing. And she sat down and, you know, she had me do a few things first. So she tested my willingness. She told me to call her really early the next day. And that was an ungodly request, but I did it. You know, something in me had shifted to really like want to try to be sober. This meeting, this Lake Murray Women's meeting, it was a shock to me because I thought all the women in Alcoholics Anonymous had no teeth And, you know, I mean, that was just my like, you had a paper bag. I had this idea of an alcoholic. You didn't wear makeup. You didn't wear jewelry. You were just, you know, I just had these really shallow ideas. And it's because that was my mom, you know, like that was my mom. And that's what I expected. I walked into this meeting. Everybody looked good. Sparkly shirts, perfect hair. And the best thing about it was they were freaking happy. They looked joyous to me. You know, there was an occasional crier, of course. It's an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. But I thought, you know, like they had, I didn't know it at the time, but they had something that I wanted. I wanted that they like a sense of ease and comfort with who they were. And I had never felt that in my entire life unless I was hammered. And then I was ease and comfort. And I'm here to tell you that Alcoholics Anonymous gives you a sense of ease and comfort. It just takes a long time. But I'm glad that it does. And that woman took me through all 12 steps and she had what I wanted. You know, she was sober. She was sober. She had a life. She helped a lot of people. She sponsored women. She made me make friends. In the first week, I had a commitment at every meeting I went to. I thought it was a bit much. You know, I had a 2.5-year-old at home. I literally had a toddler at home. I also, she reminded me, didn't work. So I could go to a meeting every day. And she did have me do 90 meetings in 90 days. I know that that's nowhere in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but it worked for me. And it really helped me figure out what kind of meetings that I could identify in and what the different types of meetings were. And I got a job in every meeting. She made me welcome newcomers like at week one where I'm just like, I don't know anything. And you want me to welcome somebody? Well, yeah, they have one day. They've never been here. And that was really important. That was the perfect thing for me, was to make me feel useful right away. And she had me do all the crappy jobs too, but that was okay because that's how I felt useful and that's how I got to know you and became part of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, early sobriety isn't exciting enough. I got pregnant after about a year with baby number two. And I married that guy 4 days into sobriety. We weren't married. So I'm sitting down with having a conversation with my sponsor. And she said, hold on, you just called him your husband. I thought he was baby daddy. And I was like, yeah, we got married yesterday. So if you're young in sobriety, talk to your sponsor. It's always a good thing. But you know what? I figure like it was meant to happen because we had another baby who's now 17, and she's an amazing human being. And both of my kids appreciate Alcoholics Anonymous for what it has done for me and to me, especially to me. I'm a great parent today. I can say that. Sometimes I doubt myself for sure. I think everyone does. But Alcoholics Anonymous has turned me into a mom that I'm proud to be. And that's a big deal. I get Instagram reels from my kid telling me I'm a good mom. Like, you know, you've arrived when you get DMs from your children. No. If you don't know what those are, come talk to me after the meeting and I'll get you an Instagram account. So I got married and then proceeded to get really unhappy really quick, but I was staying sober and I got really active really fast and that sponsor kept me busy. We did the first step, second step, third step, wrote an inventory. I'm making it sound really fast and awesome. It was really fast. It wasn't awesome. But I'm glad that that's how she did it with me. You know, you do the best of your ability, write all these things down, and then they hit you with the whammy of what's your part. And if you don't know what your part is, they will help you with that. And write a whole list of character defects. And move on. And she had me helping people pretty early, which is really important part of my story. I think it's a reason, one of the biggest reasons that I'm still here is that feeling of being useful. And that somebody said it today, one of the token presenters or takers, you know, our darkest past becomes our greatest gift. And all of those things that I was supremely ashamed of and drank over and all of the things that come along with, you know, I think we don't regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. I don't think a chick wrote that. I'm just kidding. A mother of a child, a fallen woman, whatever. I regret a lot of my past, but I do also realize that it's my greatest gift today, because I can set another alcoholic woman at ease in moments, you know, by sharing that experience. And she did that for me. So about 90 days sober, I'm working on my four step, and I go to this meeting, and in this meeting, it's called DDGTM. Don't drink and go to meetings. It's a great meeting. It's at the crack of dawn on the weekend. And that was one of the ones I had picked for my first 90 days. And I ended up liking it. So staying for a while. And this meeting was full of literally 60 and above, like age, chronological age. So there was one girl there who was maybe 20, in between 20 and 30, and I was early 30s, and they pushed her towards me because, you know, I was the youngest person, and she could identify with me, and she said, I guess I need a sponsor, and I was like, hold on. I'm going to go to the parking lot and call my sponsor and make sure I can do this, because I'm like, I can't do this, and she said, yes, you can. You know, this is, you better just stay ahead of her in the steps, and I did, and her name was Annie, and I don't know where Annie is today, but I know where I am, you know, and that started a great, it propelled me through the rest of the steps. It made me want to do amends, you know, not all of them, but I wanted my life to be different. And my experience in the steps is that the fourth step and the fifth step and sharing that revealed a lot of things to me, but I kind of knew I was a POS already. I knew all of that. What really changed me was going out into the world and trying to make it right. It made me see you different. It made me see the people in my life a little bit differently. I could take responsibility for what I did. And I, a lot of, and even today, making amends, right, babe? I'm great at it. Did you hear that? A plus. Not really. It's actually harder. I think the more time you have, it's harder to make amends. But it's where I experience the most change in my personality and how I view the world. And so fast forward a little bit, about 9 years into sobriety, that marriage was falling apart, and I finally was ready to move on. And I, at 7 years, let me back up a little bit, that's that sponsor that I have, she was amazing. She was like superstar sponsor. She drank when I was 7 years sober. She had some stuff happen. She kept some secrets, and she'll tell you all today, so I'm not sharing anything crazy, but she had to leave Alcoholics Anonymous, and I felt like the rug was pulled out from under me, because she was a super AA. You know, she did a lot of meetings. She sponsored a lot of women. She talked the talk, and she walked the walk, and life just started happening, and she got further and further away from us, and she left, and she was sponsoring about 10 women at the time, and we were like, what do we do? Oh my gosh. And I was just like, wait a minute. If she doesn't have to do it, maybe I don't have to do it, you know? And I was doing a lot of praying at that point, because I was struggling in my home life. And just, you know, I had a sobriety sister who I really hated when I first met her, but she had become my best friend. So hang on if you're there. And she's like, just call me until you can find a new sponsor. And she was my sponsor for, I don't even know, 10 more years, you know, and it just happened to work out, you know. And I didn't have to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. And what that first sponsor gave me was a few of the best gifts that I've ever had. She carried a message to me of depth and weight. She taught me how to use all the tools of the program. She taught me in 90 days how to stay sober forever. She taught me how to show up, suit up. She taught me how to do the inventory, have a connection with a higher power. What she really gave me was the gift of really doubling down and really having a relationship with a higher power. If I could go back to that period, I would have told you I had a relationship with a higher power, but her leaving made me realize that she was my higher power. I never would have used those words, but I would, like, what would she do? It wasn't like, what would God do? It was, what would she do? And so that was, like, the best gift I could have gotten, because I don't know if I can stay sober for a long time without a higher power in my life. And I was doing the things, you know, I was hitting my knees, I was praying, I was reading 86 to 88 every morning. I was doing, you know, I understood the book by that time, but what I didn't understand is that I wasn't really relying on a God to help me do everything, not just stay sober, but do everything. So that was a great gift. A bunch of stuff was happening. She left. My mom got really sick. And I wanted to leave my husband, you know. It was a lot of stuff all at once. And I stayed sober, you know. And how did I stay sober? I hit my knees. I asked for help. The community of Alcoholics Anonymous surrounded me. Dave Gilmore and what was that ball guy's name? Not you. he moved to Pennsylvania. Anyways, they came and they moved all my stuff out of this guy's house, my husband. Dan, yeah. AA guys showed up with their trucks, loaded me up, and helped me move out. It wasn't that simple, but it was a decision that had to be made. And what happened was what I realized over multiple inventories and multiple, like, I'm a good wife, I'm doing all the things that I need to do, is that the damage that I did during my drinking could never be undone with that person. I was never, what does DK say? Some stains just don't wash out. And it was real clear to me by that time. And that first sponsor and that second sponsor never told me to leave. Never. They would never say that. They just helped me do inventory. They helped me look at my part. They helped me find my truth. And my truth was that it was time to go, and it was harming my children. And I'm happy to report everybody's okay, and I'm still sober. And we're amicable today. You know, we were able to, I don't like him that much, but we're able to raise kids together, you know? I got 10 minutes left. Right before that happened, my mom got really sick. And at this point in my sobriety, my sponsor had walked me through starting to take care of my mother because she was very ill. We didn't, you know, lots of doctor's appointments. And I showed up one morning to take her to a doctor's appointment. And I'm just showing up and being a daughter, you know. And when I first started taking care of her, it was a lot of tears and a lot of like, why do I have to do this? It's like, pa, 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 why? Over and over again, poor me, why me, why me? And my sponsor said I had to do the same thing with my parents. And I'm gonna tell you that you're gonna look back and you're gonna be grateful for this opportunity. I wasn't grateful right away. I came to pick her up for a doctor's appointment, and I ended up taking her to the emergency room instead, and she died in 2 weeks. She was put on hospice care and passed away, and AA showed up for me again, you know. I called my sponsor, and she showed up, and she showed up with her daughter and Thai food and nail polish and horrible country music. And we, you know, we sat with my mom. That was her request, you know, was like, I could show up for her as a daughter and find out what she wanted, you know, and ask the difficult questions. And she wanted to listen to Dolly Parton. And she wanted her fingernails painted because they wouldn't let her paint her fingernails because of, you know, the blue and the oxygen and all that. And that she wanted, you know, just to pass in peace, you know, that was it. And I remember having that moment with her, like, are you sure? Like, you don't want to try anything else? And she just was like, no, I'm good. And I struggled. She was done struggling, you know, and we just let her go. You know, we listened to 9 to 5. Dolly Parton, 9 to 5, painted her nails, took the oxygen off, and it was very difficult, but very beautiful. You know, that's another thing AA has done for me. They showed up for me when I had my baby. They showed up for me when I had to walk through that divorce. They showed up for me every single day, you know. Here's the thing, though. If you don't show up, they're not going to show up, which means for me, basically, like, I need to reach out, you know, and I have found in Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm a very social, slightly annoying, like my dog, aggressively friendly person. And I wasn't that way when I was drinking, you know. I was isolated, I was fake, you know, like, here's how I am, like, I'm fine. And I was fine probably about 5 years into sobriety. I'm fine until I wasn't. And then I could finally reach out and ask for help. And I learned how to make real relationships with other people and be open and honest. So if you're struggling with that, like, it's not going to kill you. I really had moments where I thought, this is going to kill me, to like be really vulnerable and open. it didn't kill me, you know, and if anything, it helped me because I can help other people by talking about what's really going on with me, you know. Let's wrap it up here. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous also, here's the thing. What was I saying? You got to do the work. I mean, that's just my experience. And staying sober, and I haven't strayed away from AA. I haven't stopped going to meetings. In this period of sobriety, right? Remember, there were many where I didn't stick too long. But in this period of sobriety, I've just shown up. Even when I'm unsure, even when I don't know, even when I don't want to, which even happens today, you know, like, I don't want to come here tonight and eat spaghetti and get in front of all these people and not be judged. That's what John told me, no one's going to judge you. I said, well, then they're nothing like me. But I do it because somebody did it when I was newly sober. I went to a speaker meeting and there a speaker showed up every week and they told a story. Maybe I didn't totally identify with everything, but I could hear the language of the heart, you know, and the language of the heart looks like, you know, the laughter, the scraping of the chairs, you know, like all of that is happening in this room. And I want to give my new husband a shout out. Don't want to save you to last, but after a few years of being single, I got forced onto a website, and that's where I met my current husband. And he says he did not message me, but he did. Commented on a picture, and here's a really cool thing about AA is everybody knows everybody. So I was able to go, oh, I know that guy, because we went to some meetings, some of the same meetings in early sobriety, but I was married, and I was a good girl, so I didn't even notice him. So I recognized him. I was like, oh yeah, that's Tony. So I was able to call a girlfriend. I'm like, hey, do you know this guy? And she goes, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't think about him. He's great. I was like, okay, cool. And then I called my friend who's in the sheriff's department and I was like, can you run his record? Because I liked him. I went on a couple dates with him, and I was like, I really like this person. He's genuine. He's honest. And one of the first things he told me at our first coffee dates was, look, AA is really important to me, and I might have to take a call from a sponsee. I might have to, you know, AA is my primary purpose, and it's more important than anything else in my life. And I was like, this is the guy for me. You know, I didn't, and you are the guy for me. I love you. So his record checked out. He did have a DUI, but he told me about that. So you have to do these things when you have children. When you have girls at home, it's important. Thank you, Stephanie. She told me never to tell anyone, but you guys don't know who she is. So that's, you know, I have a really great life today. It's not perfect. I definitely don't want to give that illusion. But it's, compared to the life that I used to live, it's a pretty kick-ass life, you know. AA is at the center of it. I sponsor women. I read the book with them. I have a sponsor who's delightful, and I'm just really enjoying getting to know her. She's a good example of AA. I go to meetings on a regular basis. I still have a commitment in every meeting. I wake up in the morning. It's the first thing I do and the last thing I do. And I have a really busy life, you know? And so when I meet people who are like, I'm too busy to go to meetings, I'm like, do you want to see my schedule? Like, I make it happen. I show up because I know, I hope I never forget that AA is what saved my life and changed me so that I don't have to pick up a drink or think about when I'm going to drink next. You know, alcohol had that power over me. That power of just knowing that I was going to drink later made me relax. And I don't need to do that anymore. All I have to do is connect to source, connect to you, and show up. And I get that same feeling. Now I'm a work in progress, like I'll tell you that. And so will my husband. I'm a work in progress, and I think that that's how this thing goes, right? Like, they're talking smack in the front row. Like, I can't hear them. It's okay, I can take it today. I'm not sensitive anymore. We'll have a talking to in the car. So I'm going to wrap up, because I got told I have to end on time or you guys would leave. So... I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thank you to the chef who greeted me and cooked my food. Thank you for inviting me, John. South Bay Pioneers it's got a really cool thing going on, and I appreciate being here. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much, Suzanne. That was fantastic. Let's give her another round of applause. I'd also like to thank the residents of the house, the chefs, the cooks, the Women's Auxiliary for putting on a fantastic dinner. And we can now close in the usual manner with a prayer of Suzanne's choice. And stick around, we got 7 cakes.